Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Bob Seska. You really are sick.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, May 25, 2022, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 493 of the Biden-Harris administration, 163 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska and on Twitter at BobSeska_go. So a few weeks ago on our show, the great Mary Trump introduced me to Wajahat Ali. I knew who he was from seeing him on cable news and on Twitter, but we never had a chance to connect. But when we finally did, we were completing each other's sentences like an old married couple. Isn't that sweet? Wajahat is the author of the book, Go Back to Where You Came From. Link in the description under this episode at BobSeska.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Wajahat Ali. And be sure to check out his podcast, Democracy-ish. So thanks to Mary, Wajahat is here today to talk about the horrifying tragedy in Texas and a whole lot more. Meantime, please help support this podcast by signing up for our bonus content at BobSeskaShow.com. And if the pandemic was a disaster for your finances, you probably way increased the balances on your credit cards. And if my guess is correct, you're probably paying the top allowable interest rate on that debt. So why not just go ahead and refinance your credit cards into a super low interest rate and save a ton of money every month? Here's how. With LightStream, you can roll your cards into one low payment at a fixed rate as low as 4.98% APR. With autopay and excellent credit, you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. And just for my listeners, you can apply now and get a special interest rate discount to save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Seska. That's LightStream.com/CESCA. Link in the description. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Seska for more information.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, let's talk with the great Wajahat Ali.
Bob Seska, please, more music.
So you have, three kids and one of your kids is a stage 4 liver cancer survivor.
Yeah, yeah. So that's Nuseba. Nuseba is, you know, knock on wood, about to turn 6. And about 8 months before the pandemic, right before she was about to turn 3,
yeah,
just boom, stage 4 cancer diagnosis. So it was all over her liver and there was a spot in her lung. And then it was just really intense, man. It was like for the first 3 months, we just didn't know she'd make it. And then finally the chemo started helping, but then we needed a full liver transplant. And, you know, there was back and forth and all this chaos. And at the last second, there was an anonymous liver donor, and knock on wood, she's been cancer free for almost 3 years now.
Oh, that's incredible. Who'd you get to donate a liver?
This guy we'd never met before who happened just to live in DC. You know, over 500 people applied. And wow, even that was remarkable, that 500 people applied. But then the Georgetown transplant team said, we've never seen this like high of a supply, but we've also never seen so many people try out and not be a good fit. So they were just like overwhelmed and trying their best. And then this guy, you know, Sean Zahir, who I'd never met before, now, he's no longer anonymous, obviously, but he's like, oh, and he just stepped up and helped the little girl he had never met.
That's incredible. I mean, being someone who's been somewhat disillusioned and cynical about our fellow Americans over the last 4 or 5 years, hearing a story like that kind of peels away a lot of that disillusionment.
Right? Isn't that wild?
Yeah. The pinned video on your Twitter timeline is just absolutely priceless. Do you want to explain what that video is?
Yeah. So that video is the day where my daughter, Nuseba, rang the bell. Now, for those of you who don't know anyone who survived cancer or have gone through this, and hopefully none of you have to, ringing the bell means that you do your tests and scans and you're cancer free. So that day we were going to go ring the bell, and she had multiple costume changes, but then she decided at the last second to wear the Supergirl costume. And we called up Sean. We're like, listen, man, we just got the call. We're going to go to the hospital. We know you're busy. And he goes, what a coincidence. I was going to go to work today, but there was a flat tire, so I'm at home. So his wife Ritha brought him to the hospital, and in that video that you see on my pinned tweet is right after she rang the bell, she runs to Sean and he kind of picks her up in the air. And then I think Ritha, his wife, just edited it to the Eye of the Tiger music.
Yes.
It's just classic.
Made it perfect. What a precious, incredible human moment that was. What has the last day or so been like in your house with 3 kids? I mean, do your kids know about what happened in Texas? And do you discuss all of that sort of thing with them?
So, you know, we do discuss everything with them. My kids are ages 7, about to turn 6, and a pandemic baby who's 2.5. And when George Floyd's murder happened, we showed them the video. We sat down. We explained to them what's happening. When it comes to coronavirus, they know why they should get vaccines.
Yeah.
They know why they wear masks. They know why they sanitize their hands. Here are my children, Bob, ages 7, 5, and 3, less than 3, who voluntarily wear masks and sanitize their hands. So, wow, you know, don't tell me that adults can't do this, right?
Yeah.
You know, we explained it to our kids, and my kids just care. They're thoughtful. They're empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And also my daughter's immunosuppressed. And so when it comes to school shootings, we haven't discussed this yet because it happened last night. My kids are virtual learning because of my daughter's immunosuppressed status.
Yeah.
And so my son also, to protect my daughter, this sweet kid, has also gone to virtual school for the past 2 years. But, you know, since last night, I was just talking to another parent. Like, I just had this knot in my stomach. Like, I couldn't sleep. And then I woke up with a knot in my stomach. And I'll tell you something that just happened like an hour ago. Mm-hmm. I went to the coffee shop to get a coffee. A mom comes in with 2 kids. My first instinct looking at these 2 kids, probably ages 3 or 4, was, look at these cute kids. My immediate second reaction was, my God, these 2 kids could possibly survive a school shooting.
Yeah.
And then I thought, why did I just think this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, look at this country that I'm in America. Then my second thought upon looking at these 2 cute kids who just walked in with their mother to Starbucks is a prayer that they would not be shot up at school.
Yeah.
And because those kids remind me of the photos of the kids that I saw last night, right? I'm sure you've seen on Twitter,
yeah,
the profiles of these 19 children who were killed, just these sweet little kids, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. And immediately I thought of those kids. And then immediately I thought of all the kids. And immediately I thought of my kids. And then I thought, well, my God, thank God my kids are being homeschooled right now through virtual schools, because they're safer at home,
yeah,
than at school. And the mere thought that I had all these thoughts, a string of thoughts, made me angry, because I'm like, why am I thinking this? This is not a normal thought process for a parent. But in America, well, it's a normal occurrence to see a mass shooting. And then you just shrug your shoulders and you say, eh, let's wait for the next one. So you ask me a simple question, but those are where my thoughts are right now.
When I was a kid, I survived two house fires. It was pretty traumatic. But the thing I learned looking back on it is that kids are resilient. I mean, kids can handle more than I think we give them credit for. But
Bob, can I say this, though?
Yeah.
Should they?
Yeah.
Should they have to endure this, right?
That's
this
right.
is the thing. I think what we say oftentimes is whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we pride grit and resilience. But what we don't talk about is trauma and pain.
Yeah.
And also, why do they have to be so resilient? Is because we're not taking care of them. You don't have healthcare, be resilient. You don't have a vaccine, be resilient. You can't afford college, be resilient.
Yeah.
You're going to have less rights than your parents' generation, be resilient.
Uh-huh.
You might be target practice at school, be resilient. I mean, when you and I were growing up, we had fire drills.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they got shooting drills. This is not normal.
Yeah, it's the furthest thing from normal. This should not be occurring. And in the wake of it, we're seeing all the same old tropes trotted out by the Republicans right on schedule. Mental illness. Let's arm teachers and bring in security guards, because what we really need are children not only getting shot, but caught in crossfire. I think that's a great solution, isn't it?
But, and also teachers, you know, who are underpaid. Literally, I'm sure you've seen the data that shows over the past 40 years, you know, teachers' pay has actually decreased. Mm-hmm. So here are teachers in the United States of America who, out of their own money, have to buy school supplies for their kids because Republicans are systematically trying to dismantle the public school system, because that's what they've been trying to do since Brown versus Board of Education. Now we want our teachers to be armed, all right? Not just armed, but then trained to take out terrorists and mass shooters. And this mass shooter, by the way, shot his way through security.
So it completely nullifies the entire argument that we're hearing for the last 24 hours from Ted Cruz and all the usual suspects that, yeah, let's put armed guards in there, not even realizing, or realizing, but assuming that people who follow Ted Cruz or who follow Mitch McConnell, who follow Greg Abbott, are going to go, yeah, I guess that's a good idea. Let's do that. How about that? Not even caring what the actual ramifications of that are. Study after study, the facts on the ground yesterday, just staggering. So, and on top of that, there couldn't be a more glaring representation or example of the old Barney Frank line, where life begins at conception and ends at birth. For the Republicans, because everything that happens after birth, well, you're on your own. That's incorporating George Carlin now into it.
Oh, yeah,
right?
We care about you pre-womb, but then once you're out, you're effed. You're on your own, right? Paraphrasing Carlin. That was Carlin said that line in the HBO special in 92.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And in fact, I was just thinking back to an episode of All in the Family in which Archie Bunker gets
deep
to
cuts
do,
here, Bob.
Yeah,
I understand this.
Where he gets to go on the local nightly news and do a commentary on guns. And he says, oh, I got your solution for all your skyjackings. Arm all the passengers. And at the time, it was a joke at Archie's expense. Like, how absurd is that? Arm all the passengers on an airplane to prevent skyjackings. But now it's Republican policy. And Donald Trump is Archie Bunker without the likability.
Yeah, and it's sort of, and no punchline. And the punchline is a tragedy, you know, comes at our expense. The, you know, the thing with this mental health, you know, the trope of the mental health during Governor Abbott's conference right now, well, it's mental health. Well, it's so offensive to people with mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Those with anxiety, those with depression, those with OCD. There are millions of people who are suffering and enduring these mental health crises all around the world. How come you don't see those countries with the same number of obscene mass shootings?
Right.
Well, because they don't have the same number of guns. In the United States of America, there's 330 million people. We have 390 million guns. We have more guns than people.
Mm-hmm.
And also, people, look, I have OCD. My father has OCD. It's an anxiety disorder. I'm sorry. I've never felt compelled to shoot up a school.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So maybe the problem is guns and the lack of restrictions that we have. The fact that a kid in Texas, a teenager, can, you know, show his gun ID to vote, but not his student ID. Maybe the fact that you can do open carry now in Texas without a permit or training. Maybe the fact that you can easily get, it's more easy to get guns than there is to get like medication or to get into college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then we talk about, oh, we care about the children. No, we don't, because look what Republicans did. Kill the child tax credit, no COVID relief, no paid parental leave, no subsidized child care, right? Mm-hmm. You know, literally dismantling the public school systems. And also, if it is mental, let's take them at their word, Bob. Suppose you believe it's a mental health issue, okay? All right.
Yeah.
So mass shootings are happening. 27th mass shooting. This was the 27th mass shooting in 2022. It's still May. What are you doing to confront the mental health crisis? What are your solutions?
Right. And that, of course, it's not going to be more health care, more coverage for people for mental health issues. None of that's going to happen. In fact, Beto O'Rourke, we're going to talk about Beto O'Rourke here in a second. But he was talking about out in front of that meeting today that he that he went in and confronted Greg Abbott and confronted Ted Cruz. And what he said outside was, yeah, Texas is 50th in mental health. So that's something to be discussed.
Well, I mean, there's a real problem right now. You've seen with kids, study after study shows that during the pandemic, right, mental health crisis has increased. And then also what you've seen, if you care about kids, is the number one cause of death in children is guns.
Right.
That just came out in April. CDC said that guns are the number one killer of children and teenagers in the United States of America. I mean, that should, if a country cared about its kids, it would immediately do something.
Yeah.
But this is why I just wrote that article for the Daily Beast. I said, I don't think this country cares about this. I think this country hates its children, specifically Republicans. And people say, well, Jad, that's how dare you say that? And I say, prove me wrong. Yeah. I can judge a person by their actions and their behavior. I'm not God. I don't know your intentions. But I'm seeing a country where the number one cause of death of our children is guns. Mm-hmm. I see the 27th mass shooting. I see 19 kids killed. And this is after Parkland. This is after Sandy Hook. This is after Columbine. We know what needs to be done. 90% of Americans are for background checks, right? And yet Texas in 2021 says, let's have open carry without training or permits.
5 million kids live below the poverty line in the United States, the wealthiest nation in the history of human civilization. 3.5 million of those 5 million are homeless. Not a single proposal from any goddamn Republican about what to do about that. But we're going to protect an embryo that's divided once after fertilization. That's,
no,
that's
literally
way
at
more
fertilization.
Important.
Yeah. At fertilization.
Exactly.
Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So
it's madness, man. It's right. You know, I think it's one of those situations where when I use this terminology for the past 5 years, a lot of our colleagues, the serious sober types who get paid a lot of money to be wrong in DC, you know, I said the GOP has transformed into a radicalized, weaponized pro-death cult. And I used to break down why I used each adjective. Radicalized thanks to disinformation that now makes them believe conspiracy theories that were once fringe from the white supremacist circles, but are now mainstream talking points, weaponized thanks to, of course, the proliferation of guns and the rationalization of using violence to protect themselves because they believe they're the true victims in America, and a pro-death cult. I give you their response during COVID, an ongoing pandemic that has killed 1 million Americans. And I also give you their response during this latest mass shooting, where they'd much rather protect their guns than their kids. So prove to me that the GOP and the entire right-wing ecosystem, Bob, I think that's what people don't realize. It's not just the politicians.
Yeah.
It is the information ecosystem, the donors, the politicians, the grassroots groups, and also the mega churches. It's all part of an incestuous system that is trying to implement minority rule at the majority's expense. And we are like Charlie Brown, always falling for Lucy. Like the majority keeps kneeling to placate the rage and economic anxiety of the minority. And I'm just curious, after this latest mass shooting, the second deadliest school shooting in U.S. history, when is the majority going to say enough? And I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Well, you mentioned donors, and I want to talk about that for a second, because I think what we often do is we lump everything into, well, there's just wealthy special interests and K Street lobbyists do a lot of greasing of palms and so on. And that becomes this ongoing politics trope. It's like saying, oh, those fat cats on the Hill don't know what they're doing and they're stealing us blind with their high taxes and blah, blah, blah. Well, what we're really talking about here are guys like the usual suspects, Ted Cruz, Greg right. Abbott, all the rest of them. What we need to do is start referring to them as who they are, which are spokesmen for the for-profit retail firearm industry. They are Ronald McDonald for guns. That's their job. They are paid quite handsomely, whether
millions,
it's dark
millions.
Money, Russian money funneled through the NRA into the back pockets of all these guys. And so naturally, they're going to stick hard on that position. They're not going to change. They're not going to move. They're not going to be convinced on anything, no matter what the argument is, no matter how salient it might be. They're not going to move because it's too lucrative for them. What are they going to do? Walk away from this amazing sponsorship deal, which is exactly what it is. It's amazing they don't collect like some sort of Amazon Associates commission for every gun they sell. And it seems
You ever watch NASCAR? You know, have the cars have all the stickers of all the product placement. Yeah. I would love it if just for one day, like magic, all of the elected officials, especially the Republicans, were able to walk into Congress in front of the cameras and just see tattoos of all the corporations that own them.
When you look at a situation like Australia, for example, which famously banned and confiscated semi-automatic firearms and the mass shootings.
After a mass shooting.
Yeah, after a mass shooting.
They said enough is enough.
Yeah, exactly. And then suddenly the mass shootings dissipate in Australia.
Wow,
amazing
magic.
How that works. Yeah, but the problem is that I think the source of frustration that a lot of us are confronting today is that there's really no way that can happen here because of that firewall of cash being pumped into 50 of the 100 members of the Senate. 50 plus, I would say.
I would say three things, though. First of all, the firewall of cash, right?
Yeah.
That's one. So follow the money. Number two, where is that money going to? Republican political officials who, thanks to our just unjust, unequal system of government, we have minority rule where there's 50-50 divide in the Senate, but those 50 Republican senators represent 40 million less Americans.
Yeah.
So, okay, so now we got the political gridlock. So you got the money, the politics. And the third thing is, which is unique in America, is the obscene gun culture. There is a culture here. Obsessive, obscene gun culture. But even the gun culture, right? Majority of firearm owners in America are responsible. And if you look at the numbers over the, you know, what the gun owners even agree with, they're like, yeah, let's do background checks. That's 90% of folks.
Yeah.
You know, maybe under the age of 21, people shouldn't be getting guns. You know what? Maybe we don't need assault rifles. You know what? Maybe we don't need those bump stocks that can convert a semi-automatic into an automatic, right? So you have the majority of Americans, including gun owners, are like, okay, these are reasonable restrictions. But based on the firewall, and based upon the political culture where now the Second Amendment is like the part of the 10 commandments to being a Republican, right? It's like maybe commandment 7 to like 10.
Yeah.
It's literally that's what people don't realize. It's ingrained into the mindset and the dogma of the culture of the right wing where they believe that they have a Second Amendment right to pretty much any gun they want. And then anytime the majority says, you know what, let's just put some sane restrictions, you're coming after my rights. Zero-sum game. You're going to take away my guns.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to, like Charlton Heston said, you got to peel it off my dead hands. and what do you do in a country where a minority is armed to the teeth and is willing to use violence, Bob?
Yeah. In fact, I noticed you tweeted about Rep. Randy Fine. I forget what state he's from. I think he's a state delegate somewhere.
Freak.
Yeah. He did the old come and take my guns thing today, of all days. That's when he chooses to post this tweet.
Isn't kind of a threat, too. A threat towards Biden.
Exactly. But isn't this part of the problem, though? Elected leaders normalizing the solving of problems at the point of a gun. And one of the things I collect online, I have a lot of weird collections of political ephemera. And one of the things I like to collect are all the videos from Republicans, mostly campaign ads, where they're taking an AR-15 and they're shooting the tax code, or they're shooting a copy of the Affordable Care Act or something like that. So what's the signal? Or there was a recent one in which it was like an Old West shootout and they were literally shooting at Democratic leadership. That was the That was
or
the target
sign. Yeah. Remember Marjorie Taylor Greene standing in front of the squad with her sunglasses and her gun?
Yep.
And then you had Ted Cruz sizzling bacon on his gun.
Right.
You had the Republican who made his kids and his wife pose with guns for the holiday card.
Yeah.
And then this representative that you just mentioned, Representative Randy Fine, is from Florida. This is what he said. I found the tweet. I have news for the embarrassment that claims to be our president. Try to take our guns and you'll learn why the Second Amendment was written in the first place. And this is, what you're mentioning is the culture of violence and intimidation, mm-hmm. and the majority keeps bending the knee. This is a very deliberate strategy, Bob, by the right wing for us to concede the ground. So they did this at school boards. The minority comes. It's a small, organized, incestuous, loud minority that comes and intimidates. And then the school board says, F this, man. I can't take this. They cede the ground. They take over. Health boards, number two. Poll watchers, number three. City council. They tried to do this in the state houses. Remember Governor Whitmer?
Yeah.
So the rest of us get intimidated by this belligerent threats of violence. We concede. We cede the ground. We give a knee, and then we say, okay, maybe if we're just nice to them, maybe if we give them a column in the New York Times, maybe if we give them a contract at CNN, maybe if we give them an olive branch, they'll be nice to us. And the whole time they're like, no, we're going to kill you.
Yeah.
We want to kill you. Mm. And then, people think I might be hysterical here. Let me just give you one example. If I still haven't convinced you. Just today, it came out that Donald Trump nodded approvingly when the crowd was chanting to kill Mike Pence on January 6th.
Yeah.
They tried to kill the whitest, most Christian Republican man on earth. What do you think they're going to do to the rest of us?
Yeah, there's an element of, I don't know what you would call it, an appetite for chaos. Intrinsic to Trumpism, more or less, that as long as things are chaotic, we're on top somehow. And I assure you, Donald Trump is loving the prospect of appearing at this NRA thing in Texas in a few days.
Texas, of all places.
Yeah, yeah. And I noticed that John Cornyn already backed out of that, which is...
Oh, he did? Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Abbott, when I last checked about an hour and a half ago, Abbott says, I can't believe he said this. He goes, I wait and see. I'm living day to day. And I had to retweet him. And I said, well, 19 children aren't living.
Yeah.
But that's what he said. So Abbott's probably going to go, man, because I think Abbott and DeSantis right now are vying to take the mantle of Trumpism from Trump.
Yeah.
And if you look at where the Republican Party and the conservative movement are going, specifically in how extreme they're going to be, I've written about this. Look at Florida and Texas. And if Abbott does the right thing and doesn't go to NRA, to the Republicans, apologizing is seen as weakness.
Yeah.
That's what they've taken from Trump. So you can't shame shameless people, which is why I think he's going
to
go.
Oh, yeah. You know the phrase I was trying to think of? It actually comes from that show, The Morning Show. And the phrase was, chaos is the new cocaine. That I think that applies very well to the Republican Party these days. But how about Beto O'Rourke today confronting Dan Patrick and Greg Abbott at that conference? That's the kind of guts I think we need in the Democratic Party. And it has, I think, scratched a major itch for a lot of Democrats on Twitter today, especially the fact that he has taken a bold approach. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were calls for an O'Rourke/McMorrow ticket for 24 or 28 or something like that, because I think these are the new style Democrats that we all have an appetite for, aren't they?
I mean, exactly it, right? The old school Democrats who are stiff and terrified and do the backroom deals and shake hands with, other Republicans and drink whiskey and all about bipartisanship. I think what you saw with McMorrow, who is from Massachusetts, and I think what you saw with Elizabeth Warren in response to the leaked draft of Alito's opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, and I think what you saw today with Beto O'Rourke is people want fighters. They want passion. They want authenticity. They want someone willing to shake it up. Even Fetterman, right? Whatever your opinions about him, why do you... I knew he'd crush Lamb. Lamb is constructed in a democratic laboratory made by think tank nerds and corporate lobbyists who are all about bipartisanship. And look what happened to him.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you see that anger and that passion being represented by someone who's willing to fight back intelligently. Mm-hmm. So that's what McMurrow did, right? She took on this hateful slander that she's a member of QAnon. She was able to reframe herself and own her whiteness, her Christianity, and her being a mom and a woman. And she shamed them.
Yeah.
And that type of fire, that's what literally led to her becoming an overnight sensation. And like, you know, a record number of money went to this, you know, this small, no disrespect to her, but you know, usually people in her position don't get these types of donations, mm-hmm. but it just shows you the appetite. But Bob, the thing is, I don't think that appetite is reflected in Democratic leadership.
Yeah.
Schumer and Pelosi aren't made of this stuff. They're just not made for it.
No,
they're not made for this moment.
In fact, I tweeted earlier today that, you know, Schumer, while he might be a nice guy and there was a time for Schumer's style of politics, he's just too affable. He can't successfully sell the outrage. He can't successfully sell the toughness that he needs to have. What we need are wartime leaders at this point.
You need a wartime consigliere.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly right.
Like Hagen is great. Tom Hagen is great. We love him. But this is not for you. You know, you go to Nevada and you take care of the business there. Mm-hmm. And we need wartime conciliaries who know how to fight. That's why they're not built for this moment. They're not made for it.
Yeah.
There are these old school Democrats, you know, who chummy, old, white, usually men, wealthy, who are friends with Mitch McConnell, who hang out with Susan Connell. Like, oh, but she's nice.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Mitch McConnell's bringing a bazooka and they're bringing a pencil.
And I hate to pick on the Democrats when we should really be targeting the people who have been the roadblock to all of the progress that we've won, which are the Republicans. But Chuck Schumer a few weeks ago was doing the whole ultra MAGA thing. Remember, there was about 10 days
super
where
MAGA, ultra MAGA.
Yeah. Ultra MAGA. And what he was saying was vote for ultra MAGA Republicans .. if you want this, but vote for Democrats if you want this other thing. But what he was doing in the process of doing that whole rhetorical trick was saying, vote for ultra MAGA Republicans. So if you change the channel, just as he's saying that, you're hearing Chuck Schumer telling a TV audience to vote for ultra MAGA Republicans. And, you know, the face palms, I'm still bruised from the face palming I was doing when I was watching that clip. I
mean, they suck. They just suck. Yeah. It's because it's a very look, I'm in Virginia, you know, I've been in the media game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work at CNN. I was an on-air contributor for a year. I could tell you it's a very incestuous circle, very incestuous. And, you know, it's the same few people. They listen to the same few talking points with the same few data and the same few research. And they just, it becomes like a hive circle, the hive mentality.
Yeah.
And they rinse and they repeat. And they're also very timid. And so they just sit there and they're terrified, right? Like, look, one thing I respect about Republicans is a strange thing to say. Is that when they have power, they don't give an F, Bob.
Yeah.
They'll just do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you an example. Remember Trump was president? Tax cuts, very unpopular. $1.9 trillion tax cuts for the rich, still very unpopular. You know what the Republicans said? We don't give a shit. We're going to bum rush this. I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
They literally did it in the middle of the night. They were literally adding stuff in the margins in pen. And when Democrats were whining and complaining, they said, we don't give a shit. And then when they showed them the polls, they said, we don't give a shit. And they just did it. And so these Democrats literally aren't built for this fight. They aren't built for it. And they don't even know how to message. And then the people who are leading the way in messaging, these young women, people like McMurrow, even people like AOC, they hate them because they're young women, they're women of color, and they disrupt the status quo. And I'm like, just learn from them. Just take a one-day class from AOC on how to use Instagram.
All right, if you're only listening to the free portion of the Bob Seska Show on Apple Podcasts and so on, you're only hearing the first hour. There's an extra 20 minutes of show after the end credits roll at the end of every Tuesday and Thursday podcast, and it's all happening on our Patreon page. Of course, I'm talking about the Shadow Docket podcast at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show or simply BobSeskaShow.com. It's a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of all the fun and news, and it's only going to cost you pennies per episode. The Shadow Docket drops every Tuesday and Thursday after the free shows, and it'll only cost you $5 per month, and you'll be supporting this fully independent podcast. Don't miss out. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you in advance.
Bob Seska!
With regards to the Republicans just not giving a fuck about anything, You can see a couple of more recent examples where they voted against the baby formula thing. What, 192 of them in the House?
Just last week.
Voted against the baby formula thing. And then prior to that, they've been routinely voting against aid to Ukraine. So they don't give a shit about the right thing to do
COVID
in these
relief,
circumstances, broadly
Ukraine
speaking.
Aid. Yeah. Baby formula, yeah. The new domestic terrorism bill, because they know it'll expose white supremacists and their base, all voting against it, by the way, which should be a huge, in a perfectly sane country where chaos wasn't cocaine. Mm-hmm. The fact that Republicans are all about like security and you know, law and order voting against, you know, this domestic terrorism bill would be pretty big news.
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely.
But now we don't even talk about it.
Yeah, and you know, along those lines, I've been really trying to troubleshoot this notion of getting new gun laws through without running into an Alito court roadblock with the Second Amendment. And the thing I keep going back to, and obviously this is kind of a long game, but the Republicans had a lot of success state by state passing trap laws to restrict abortion. And without necessarily trampling on Roe, they were finding all these creative ways to get around Roe while still making it almost impossible to get an abortion in some states. And so I keep thinking, God, you know what? Maybe that's where it's at for gun control, thinking of ways to make the purchase of firearms less desirable. I mean, for God's sake, we did it with smoking. I mean, just the advertising alone to shame people about smoking cigarettes for several decades has been immensely effective without passing a single piece of legislation along those lines. It's just been one ad after the next. Yeah.
So this is where, why not try it out? But this is where I think, again, two things. The culture.
Yeah.
America is obsessed with guns. Mm-hmm. And also with climate change, with income inequality, with the rise of fascism, with the rise of this type of white supremacist violence, you're going to see more and more people buy guns. Like, gun sales skyrocketed last year, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also, I'll tell you straight up for your listeners.
Actually, same in 2013. 2013, yeah. After Sandy Hook, gun sales went through the roof. It's amazing.
It always
happens. The graph.
Always go through the roof, right? Yeah. And so we got 390 million guns. We got 330 million people. And I'm telling you, the conversation that I've had with a lot of my friends who don't own guns, people of color, you know what they're saying? I got to get a gun to protect myself from what's happening in this country.
Yeah, I've
specifically
seen that.
With the rise of white nationalists.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
I'm on the fence, man. I don't own a gun. Mm-hmm. I got three kids. I'm in a you know, Virginia neighborhood, which is diverse, but Virginia went for Youngkin. I was the one who was not surprised. And I told my friends that you guys are ignoring the CRT threat. And they're like, no, McAuliffe is going to walk in and get this. I'm like, okay, just watch.
Wow.
And right at the end of my street is a huge Republican supporter. There's two homes. I think like the elders and his kids who are now adults. They own the two homes and the big property. Huge Youngkin sign, huge Trump sign. So that's Virginia. It's not blue. It's purple-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Purple-ish. And so a lot of my friends in Virginia are like, man, you know, this country where it's going, usually this country turns on people of color and the marginalized during crisis.
Yeah.
So I'm on the fence, man. For the first time in my life, I'm seriously considering about getting a gun for that reason alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's I was on another podcast talking about this last week. I own a rifle myself. It happens to be an 1861 Springfield rifled musket from it's a Civil War.
So you
War
took the Second Amendment literally.
Yeah, I did. I did. I went with the thing that takes a minute and a half to load if you're really good at it. For no other reason, I have it to use as like a bludgeoning tool. It's better than a baseball bat. You know what I mean? If there's a home intruder, I would use it as basically a club.
Use the butt of the gun.
yeah, because that could do some damage. I realistically, I'd never be able to load it in time. Besides, you get one shot and you'd have to reload. It would be terrible. It's a terrible firearm to use for that purpose. But that brings me to the idea that there is this myth that home intrusions can be stopped by people who are, you know, well armed. And regardless of who might be coming into your home, whether it's an intruder, a legitimate intruder, or a police officer, or a series of police officers, It always seems like that's a losing proposition. If you're the one with the gun standing off against, a bunch of police officers, or against someone who maybe will find your gun and use it against you, or maybe one of your children finding a gun and using it to, you know, kill one of their siblings or something like that. There are all new dangers that go along with that.
We just need less guns, man. We need less guns.
Exactly.
And at the very least, we need less, like, you know, ARs. And we need it's wild, man. It's sometimes easier to buy a gun than to vote in this country. I think that guns are so integral to American culture, we're never going to get rid of them.
Yeah.
So what realistically, you know, we look at what can be done and how you can move the needle. And this is where I go back to the numbers, where most gun owners are responsible gun owners, and therefore universal background checks and increasing the age to 21 and maybe removing those bump stocks. And maybe we don't need these weapons of mass destruction. Like, maybe if you can, like, so let's go back to your idea, right?
Yeah.
You know how you made smoking unpopular?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'll make guns unpopular, but I think you can make assault rifles unpopular.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It seemed like when that anti-smoking campaign began, and I want to say it was someplace during the Clinton administration, maybe in the early days of the Clinton administration, when it really got underway, where you started to see the TV ads and some bits of legislation being passed to raise taxes on tobacco products, etc. Those TV ads were immensely effective at a time when, I mean, I was a smoker for 17 years, and I've smoked in malls. I smoked on an airplane one time. I seldom smoked in the house, but smoking cigarettes was quite prolific, especially.
Oh yeah, man.
I mean, I went to college from 89 to 94, and everyone I knew smoked. Yeah, yeah. And so these ads started to land when smoking was just part of the American lifestyle. And
remember they were, Camel? The cool Camel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which was more recognizable with some kids than Mickey Mouse, or as recognizable. Children were being directly marketed to. It's sort of like there's a firearm that was being marketed about 5 years ago called the Cricket, and it was a miniature rifle that was being marketed to children or people of small stature. So, and they came in fun colors, and there was a whole commercial with fun music and the child shooting
targets.
Same
thing which they tried to do with vaping.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So the thing, going back to smoking real quick, those ads landed at a time when smoking was immensely popular. And so I think that as a model, it could actually kind of work here, given the fact that on the news, people are seeing these massacres, these immense tragedies. And then you couple that with, seriously, do you really need it? I mean, it's a hobby. Do you really need it? Do you really need to collect all these guns? I mean, come on. I mean, I'm not writing these ads myself, but you know what I mean, right?
No, I mean, and also, you know, I think it's going to take a multi-pronged approach. So there has to be a media and communications kind of push to change the narrative around this. I think a tragedy like this and tragedies like this have to cause that moment of outrage and awareness that mobilizes grassroots groups and support. I think you need elected officials who, you know, use this rage and run on it and hopefully get elected. And I think you also then just need the young people. I think this young generation is going to be sick and tired of it, right? Sometimes the old just has got to go.
Yeah.
And I think this young generation that is literally going to survive massacres, right? Like, you see how it profoundly changes them. Like, they don't forget. They don't, you know, they're traumatized for life. I think it's one of those situations where they're gonna be like, enough is enough. And it's one of those situations that the sad part is, Bob, that it's gonna take all of this just to have chaos not be the cocaine. Like, it's absurd that this is the 27th mass shooting. And this is absurd that after Sandy Hook, look, in a sane country that loved its kids more than guns, Sandy Hook would have been the game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Exactly. And it was remarkable to observe what was happening in Congress at the time in those several months. What, Sandy Hook was December of 2012. Subsequent 3 months, there was one piece of legislation on the table, just one. And ironically enough, it was Joe Manchin, Pat Toomey. They wanted to close the gun show loophole, something like that. I think it was the gun show loophole. That was the Manchin-Toomey legislation. Naturally, filibustered by the Republicans, even though it was co-sponsored by a Republican. So As a result of that, nothing got done after Sandy Hook. There was no political will. And as I said before, the only thing that really happened on the Hill regarding Sandy Hook was that I started to see gun giveaways, AR-15 giveaways among elected members of the House of Representatives. It was staggering. There was a crazy guy from Texas, strangely enough. His name was... I can't remember the guy's name. It's Steve something. He was a nut. He's in prison now, appropriately enough. But right out of the chute, he was like, okay, let's do a fun contest on our website and give away an AR-15 because why not? It's like after 9/11 doing a giveaway on your website for box cutters. You know what I mean?
It's like, yeah, this I'm sure this is the right. We read the room.
Yeah.
But that's it's just part and parcel of the culture, man. Like the fact I knew this country wouldn't change because for me, you know, Sandy Hook was like, what, 10 years ago, right? More than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That was when nothing happened after Sandy Hook. That's when a part of me, I don't know if like a part of my soul died, but like, you know, the part of you that thinks that there's hope for this country to change. I'm like that. No.
If it's not going to happen,
because you, like you mentioned Australia, and I'm glad that you did. Look at Australia and look at New Zealand. There's other European countries. Australia and New Zealand are very good examples of how real leadership and a country's outrage responds to a crisis. Like immediately, they're like, nope, we don't care. Boom, reform, change. And then you see the data that shows remarkably, guess what happened? Reduction in gun violence.
Yeah.
But the fact that even after Sandy Hook, nothing happened. And then that's another one. Another pivotal one was Parkland in Florida. Remember that?
Yeah.
Nothing happened.
Yeah. Nothing happened there. And one of the most devastating was Las Vegas. That's where you had a guy with an AR-15.
The mass shooter just sat there with like a van full of, weapons and just opened fire. Well, let me put it this way. David Hogg, who's a survivor of Parkland.
Yeah.
Survivor of Parkland tweeted earlier today that he feels this time it's different. Do you agree with him?
Oh, God, I'm the wrong person to ask. My answer is no. No, I mean, Wajahat, I'm just sitting here going, I was texting with a friend of mine a few minutes ago before we started the show. It's like, guys, it's Chinatown. Nothing's going to happen. This is just
forget it, Jake.
It's futile. Yeah.
Forget it, Jake.
Yeah. I wish I didn't feel that way, but I do. If it didn't happen after Sandy Hook, I don't know what the hell it's going to take for it to happen.
Do you think if a Republican elected official's kid dies, would it change?
No. I think
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't either.
I think that they're just that awful. I think it would be, yes, we have to go after the shooter. And yeah, shooting people is already against the law. So more law enforcement. And it'll be the same old shit.
Do you see how Abbott just Chicago'd the shooting?
No, what did he say?
He blamed Chicago. He says, look at Chicago. They have
God.
Yeah. And that hasn't stopped. And he just did that like with shamelessly.
Yeah. Yeah. But basically to say, this is black people.
Look at the black.
It's the black people's fault. Yeah. The black people.
And also those guns in Chicago come from outside of Chicago, by the way. They come from neighboring states.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's really, I think the target, and you're really onto something with this. The target has got to be the gun culture. You can target the gun culture, I think, through ways that don't involve a big court battle over the Second Amendment. Because I think there are ways using our culture itself as a launching pad for a campaign like that. And I think maybe that's where, maybe to make them less desirable. Like, just for example, going back to the trap style laws, just thinking like, what sells a lot of firearms? Like, why do a lot of these guys want to go to Cabela's or whatever and pick up a AR-15? What's driving them to do it? And I think part of it is the fact that they look so cinematic and militaristic.
This looks like something
out of an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie or something like that. Yeah, let's get one of those. It's like one of the special agents in a Mission Impossible movie or something. And I think that's what drives a lot of people to collect those firearms. And then once it's like having a car collection, and you collect enough cars, you're going to want to drive those cars eventually. You collect enough guns, you're going to want to shoot those guns eventually. So how do you remove that level of aesthetic appeal from the firearms? And I always go back, I know my listeners are probably sick of me saying this all the time. Maybe legislating that all firearms have to be colored pink. Maybe that targets the toxic masculinity that drives people to buy all these guns. I don't know.
But you're not incorrect about this, you know, and because, you know, people laugh, but the toxic masculinity, the massive insecurity, and the data shows that, I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of Trump voters and a lot of the red states, that's where you have the highest number of search engines, right? For like, infertility and penis enlargement, mm-hmm. and, you know, all this other stuff, right? A lot of this has to do with, these men trying to be alpha men, and these men trying to imitate a fictionalized version of American masculinity that does not exist. Example, yeah. John Wayne.
Yeah.
Example, Ronald Reagan, the cowboy.
That's it.
Example, Donald Trump. Look how they make Donald, look how Donald Trump is in real life. And look at how the romanticized vision of Trump that they have, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's a fraud. Apprentice, the art of the deal. It's just all bullshit. It's artifice. And so this concept of the John Wayne character, in real life, John Wayne was a failed surfer who got injured, fell into acting, played a cowboy, was not really that religious, kind of a womanizer, right? But John, when you hear these guys talk, Gary Cooper,
yeah,
John Wayne. And you're like, Hollywood actors? But in their mindset, it's that tough man who stands his ground and takes his gun and kills the Indians, right? And then that became Chuck Norris, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is something about our culture as it is represented in television, in ads, in movies, that I think reinforces this type of image that the real American man is a man who, you know, doesn't take shit from anyone and doesn't cry, doesn't care, is politically incorrect, stands his ground, takes his gun and shoots the bad guy. And going back to culture, you know, what you said about, remember, again, let's look at the camel cigarette avatar was like this cool camel in a jacket with sunglasses.
That's right.
And you're like, I remember that camel. Like, mm-hmm. I want to be that cool camel. And so we underestimate the power of culture, the power of visuals, the mm-hmm. power of narratives. And I do think, though, if there is a kind of a switch, Bob, in movies and TV shows where maybe guns are reviled, or you see like,
yeah,
if you see like what really happens with guns, where like the hero picks up the gun and instead of like shooting the bad guy, shoots like his kid instead. You know, like
just something to strip away the appeal of it. It's almost like that prescription medication that you can get to help you quit smoking, where when you smoke a cigarette, it makes the smoke taste really bad and makes you not want to smoke anymore because it tastes fucking awful. That makes the guns feel awful. Yeah.
I saw this last week, just a couple of days ago, on the show Barry by HBO show Barry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spoiler alert. There's like these, it just shows you that very quickly that there's these just mom and kid, right, who are mm-hmm. traumatized because Barry, the hitman in the show, had like previously killed their husband, right? And then they get tipped off that Barry was the killer. So they buy a gun and they're like, we're going to go kill him. Again, suburban mom, suburban kid. They have no idea what they're doing. And so they park outside and they see Barry and they're like, we're going to jump on him and kill him, right? So the mom takes the gun out in the car and guess who she accidentally shoots? Her son.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember I saw that. I'm like, this was really well done. Like, stuff like that is actually what would happen in real life, right? Like, if teachers are freaking armed and then there's a mass shooter and then now you're asking the teacher in the panic to take out a gun and be Rambo, what's going to happen realistically?
Yep. And it happens way more often. That same congressman whose name I couldn't think of, who's in jail now, who was giving away AR-15s, he used to have a bumper sticker that he also gave away. And it said, if fetuses were armed, there'd be fewer abortions. Something along those lines. And all I could think about was all of the stories in which a little kid got his parents' gun and shot his brother or his sister or shot his parent or something like that. So, you know, my reaction to that was, yeah, you know what? These kids already have guns. They're already shooting people with them because you're leaving them laying around. You know, and just one last thing about the culture, and then I want to ask you about something else. But this nation was born at the point of a gun. The revolution was a hot war fought against the British Empire. And in that respect, I think it still circulates in a lot of people's bloodstream. Like, okay, that's how you solve problems. That's how you defeat oppression. And I always mm-hmm. got to remind those people that at the time of the revolution, one of the reasons we fought that revolution was because we had no representation. Mm-hmm. We had no representation in Parliament. There was no democracy to work out that problem because there was no representation. And so it had to be fought at the point of a gun. Now we have democracy. There's no reason that we need to be using firearms to push change or to get what we want or to fight back against something we disagree with. But yet it's still circulating through our bloodstream. The DNA is still in our national bloodstream. And it's just about, to me, it's just about starting a long view campaign culturally to kind of start to dissipate that, to start to erase that DNA from our system. You know what I mean?
And no, but I think you're onto something that, again, I feel like movies, TV shows, ambassadors, influential individuals, commercials, video games, if they just make a pivot to this, I think in 10 years, coinciding with hopefully a growing consensus of rage, which will coincide, unfortunately, with growing mass shootings, it can pivot the young generation.
Yeah, yeah. I so agree. I noticed the other day, too, that David Perdue, sorry, David Perdue, sorry you lost big time in a landslide.
Go back to where you came from, David Perdue.
I was just going to say, he inadvertently quoted the title of your book the other day.
Love it. Thank you, David Perdue.
Have you sent Stacey Abrams a signed copy yet?
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, you know, for those of you who don't know, David Perdue, who was running to be governor, his job was to pretty much be Trump's Luca Brasi and promote the big lie. He lost to another piece of crap, Brian Kemp. You know, they're all radicals, but this guy's extreme radical. And in the final days of the campaign, he tells Stacey Abrams, a black woman born and raised in America, to go back to where she came from because she was rightfully calling out how Georgia is like ranked dead last in so many different places.
Yeah.
And you need new leadership. And then she he also said that she is a shame to her race.
Yes, exactly.
And this is, you know, go back to where you came from. The title of my book is also the laziest oldie but goodie classic used by a racist throughout time.
That's
it was
right.
used against Germans, the Irish, Italian, Japanese Americans. And let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, it was used by Donald Trump against, wait for it, surprise, surprise, four congresswomen of color when he said they need to go back to their country.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, David Perdue lost. And I was thinking about writing an article about this later this week, is that, yeah, Perdue's going back to where he came from, but Trumpism is here to stay.
Right. Well, once again, the book is called Go Back to Where You Came From. I got a link in the description under this episode at bobsesca.com. You can follow Wajahat on Twitter at Wajahat Ali. Link also in the description for that. And you can find his writing at The Daily Beast and his podcast called Democracy-ish. Thank you so much, my friend. I'm glad we finally met up.
No, thank you so much. I'm glad it was Mary Trump who finally introduced us. And thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed this.
The great Mary Trump. Thanks again, Wajahat. We'll talk to you next time.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Could it be the light that I found tonight? Could it be that it comes from inside?